And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Andy White and Nick Butler talk social media.
I think if we have an intro that's based on people scripting it, they're not going to get it.
So what do you think we should say?
Conversations around social media, technology, two of the brightest social media entrepreneurs in the south of England today.
Yeah, let me write that down.
I think the idea is we've got to go around every cafe in the south of England and record a different episode each one.
What should we call it, though?
It's all about social media. It's Andy White and the Loudmouth Man. Social media white noise.
I like it.
And now... Oh, sod it. Everything they just said.
And we're rolling.
Are we doing it now?
Yeah.
I was going to go open up with the really interesting thing.
Nick's explaining our podcast to the proprietor.
I got told off. He's now recording. See, I actually got told off because we went around the houses too much. But this is episode 57 of Social Media White Noise, the podcast that's designed to talk about tech and social media. And the gentlemen who are behind the counter at, where are we? Coffee at 33. I don't know which road this is on.
Because it's Trafalgar Street.
Trafalgar Street.
Yeah. I think we've been here before.
And whilst Andy is concerned...
I'm convinced we've been here before.
Been here before.
But Nick doesn't think we have.
I just want to say we haven't, because first of all, coffee's fantastic.
And secondly,
the
tea's very good too.
The venue is awesome. And, no, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. This venue is actually awesome. It's got that wonderful, sit down, have a coffee, have a chat ambience going on about it. And we are actually ready to go. So we're not going to go around the houses.
No.
We're not going to talk about the coffee.
No.
We're not going to upset Fiona because we're not getting into the show.
Fiona. I think you said Fiona.
You're doing it again.
Right.
I've got this great new laptop.
Yeah, Nick came in this morning with a Dell.
No, with a Dell, not
with
a Dell.
With a Dell. And it was four laptop. Minutes before he was productive from booting it up.
Well, we have a Vostro V130. This is part of the Dell's Trade Secret campaign, encouraging small and medium-sized businesses to look at Dell's products and to consider Dell's products. And they sent me, very kindly, they sent me a Dell Vostro V130, and I've posted some pictures previously. It's a nice slimline laptop. And if you have never played with a Mac, then you'll not have the following expectations. I get about two hours of battery life out of this laptop. It is slim, it is lightweight, it is very portable. It is a good build. Having played with Dell Latitudes and Dell Vostros, this is actually a really nice build for
it's
a Dell.
It's got short corners.
But when you go to boot it up, it's very Windows.
It's got short corners. I could cut my finger on that.
I will beat you to death with it. That's what I will do. So you can sort of get a thing where you open the laptop lid, and if you're a Mac user, you open the laptop lid and start working. When you're a Windows user, you open the laptop lid, and then you wait for Windows to start, and then you wait to log in, and then you wait for apps to start, and then you wait to get connected, and it literally was about 4 minutes.
Yeah, it was about four minutes.
So I would say if you're not a Mac user, you're not going to be have these built-in expectations of performance. And I have a lot of clients who use Dell Kit with me, and this is unfortunately, having received this now, this is going to be the laptop that I'm going to say to them, no, you've got to buy this laptop. I think a lot of my clients would prefer to have this format. They're not necessarily interested in screen size, far more interested in the ability to have something that is lightweight, that is extremely portable, and that actually has a small feeling that there is a quantification of design in there. But just talking about Dell's trade secrets, there is a Facebook group for this, but don't let it hold you back. They're really sort of putting together an idea here. They're trying to put together an idea of what small and medium-sized businesses are looking for and what they're doing and how they're using technology. One of the things they're looking for is obviously people's first impressions. What's the best first impression you can give? What are your first impressions?
From the Dell?
Not from the Dell, but as a businessman. You know, what's the thing that you would say if you were giving advice to somebody in terms of first impression, what's the important thing to you? Now,
productivity.
For myself, I always say answer the question. Don't answer the question that fits the thing you can sell.
Yeah.
Answer the question the person has asked, and very often answer it not in the context of being blatant, just say here's an answer, but give them the answer that fits the whole requirement. You know, it's not enough to say to somebody with a laptop need to say, oh, your budget's 400 quid, go buy this laptop. Find out if their need is to play video games, find out if they need... So answer the question they've asked. And sometimes if they haven't asked that question, make them ask the right question. That would be my advice. But I've put a link up to the site, Trade Secrets.
You have.
They've given some talk.
You've
about.
Been very fishy, Vic.
And
he has, you know.
Dell, having sent me this, I know I'm going to take this around all my clients. My clients are never going to spend £1,400 on a Mac for a laptop, but they're very likely to spend £600 for a laptop. This is available cheaper, but the model I'm looking at, the version that I'd be looking at to promote to clients, is going to be the £600 version. And it's a Dell, Vostro V130 with an Intel Core i5, 4 gigs of RAM in here, 500 gig storage. I think if there was one thing I would change out of the box, I'd take the 500 gigs of hard drive out. I'd put in 120 gigs of SSD, mm-hmm. which I suspect would be quite a bit faster in performance and increase the battery life to it. But obviously, you're going to end up with an increase in the cost of the base unit. But SSD drives now are just dropping in price so much. It's worth taking a bite. Now I'm now looking at 40 gig SSD drives for £50 coming out of eBuy.
These are solid state drives?
These are solid state drives.
Well, the same ones that you get in the Air.
Mm-hmm. Woo! I mean, the solid state drives are just crashing in price at the moment, and will continue to do so this year. Which is a great thing. Because if anything, if you've got a machine that's a couple of years old, you just put a solid state disk drive in and add more memory, the performance of that machine will seem truly freshened up. You'll get a couple more years out of it.
Yeah.
I have a client who came to me. He had a Dell Vostro desktop unit that he was doing video editing work on, and he had Windows XP on there, but he had 4 gigs of memory. It wasn't referencing more than 2 gigs at a time.
Oh, right.
And it had 2 320 gig SATA drives in there. So we looked at a number of options for upgrades, and eventually we settled on the concept that we'd get a solid state disk drive.
Yep.
And would plug it in and would put Windows 7 on it.
And they're easy to retrofit, they're the same, you know.
Well, it's a SATA drive, it's just a little 2.5-inch disk.
Yeah.
So I plug this drive in.
Yeah.
And the performance of his desktop was noticeable that for the less than £200 of cost in getting Windows 7 upgrade and an SSD drive to plug in, he felt he had performance that was worth the 800 quid he might have spent if he'd gone off down buying a whole new machine.
Right.
So he's very happy with his machine specification now, because it's now meeting his needs without having exceeded his budget. It's something worth going to play with. And SSD charts, I think, are something which are going to... They're disk drives, they're boring, they're not going to get talked about. Dell, if you could do one thing, put an SSD drive in these Vostro V130s, let's see what happens to performance then. Or maybe I'll open this and plug one in and we'll see what happens.
So generally, you're pretty impressed with it?
I've brought it down to use it for part of the show.
Yeah.
For all of the show. For all of the 2 hours and 14 minutes that I have remaining on it.
The battery's pretty whacked, isn't it? And presumably your Air is at home, or it's so small you could bring the Air as well.
Well, I brought the Air with me as well.
Because it just fits in.
It means that I now actually walk around with the best part of 8 hours worth of productivity, minus 4 minutes for the Windows machine booting up. And it does help that I have my... three MiFi component that always provides us with our internet access. It's the thing about the internet is it's becoming almost ubiquitous. It's coming around us so easily that you sort of begin to think, well, now that this is all so easy to just get online and get internet and get information, you know, what information do I want to get down and how do I get hold of it? Leads neatly onto the question of, are you a hoarder or a curator?
Nick spoke to me this morning as we were walking up a very steep hill to the station. And then he had to stop speaking.
This was an unusual event for Andy. We usually don't talk at all until we get in. It's usually a quiet and sombre affair as we meet. And then we get together and we arrive and we set on these things. And that's when we actually talk to each other.
These stalls are funny, aren't
they?
Hilarious. I can't put my feet down. I'm such a short ass.
There is nothing there. Yes.
You've got the same pot, haven't you?
Well, I'm sure anyway.
I like to rest my feet somewhere.
Are you a hoarder or a curator? Now that you have all the internet available,
Libraries.
Is it out in the cloud or do you have it on your device?
Libraries, they're for hoarding. Libraries are designed for hoarding.
So you had... Did you ever have an iPod, iPhone?
Yeah,
iPod,
of course iPod. I have.
And is it loaded with more music than you've ever listened to?
No, because there's an 8 gig limit.
Okay,
it's many podcasts.
That is many podcasts. Is it that you take time to load it up with music you're probably never going to listen to at all? or... Okay, let's put some context here. I've seen two friends of mine get a Kindle. Mm. Documentally, you know, patron saint of data.
Yes.
And,
is he?
And Senny Dreadful. Data. Yes. Not
Star Trek documenting.
Not, and Senny Dreadful.
Right.
On Twitter. Both of whom were at different ends of the potential Kindle user aspect.
Yeah.
So documentally, I could count, and he would get a Kindle, and it would become another mobile device that functioned in how he was doing his creativity, his work, his delivery of content.
Yeah.
Senny Dreadful, who came from a sort of much more ambivalent towards the electronic book format, ambivalent towards the, you know, the ebook format and so forth, and didn't necessarily think she'd be such a convert as she is. And as she's discovered, you can just buy books. You can buy a book whenever you want to buy a book. So you finish reading a book.
This is Sharon.
I'm going to get her name wrong, but
sorry,
Jen Senny Dreadful.
Okay, sorry, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's on the show notes.
Oh, yes.
It's Monday, Andy.
Sorry, I've got my wrong glasses on.
Now, there are two different ends of the spectrum here with... you know, the likelihood of how they're going to integrate this particular bit of technology into their day-to-day lives. And Christian posts a post today, documented post, which says he's got over 400 books on his Kindle right now, and he's now reading more than ever. And I sort of looked at my Kindle, which actually has four books on it, and my Kindle's being loaded with books as I read them.
Mm.
And I can see that Senny Dreadful's being pretty much the same. She's loading books as she reads them.
Right.
You don't have to do that because there's no weight compromise, there's no time compromise, there's a price compromise unless Chris Grant gets some of the free books.
People just do it because they can, Nick.
But do you hoard? Is it the result now?
Is hoarding the right word?
Because it comes down to the point that once the internet becomes so ubiquitous that your data storage is out in the cloud, and to a certain extent this is what the new Windows Phone 7 is all about.
Mm.
Yeah. You all stream the content to yourself when you need it.
Yeah.
Outside of the data caps issues, which is again the ridiculous end of what we have in the UK for internet access, outside of that, are people going to go, I'll have all of my data because I can't guarantee I'll have an internet connection, therefore I'll just have everything now just in case. So you may have 400 books, but it's likely there are books in there that you are, it's like buying books in IKEA. These are just books that are going to make the bookshelf look good.
Oh, those plastic books, yeah,
that
aren't really
books. These aren't necessarily books that you're actually reading.
Nick. I forgot what I was going to say. Carry on.
Good. Well, I'm going to be a person who just buys the book in as you need it. So you look at somebody's bookshelf and think, are these... When my neighbour came in, she saw our book collection, she saw the bookshelves, lots and lots of books, and she said, have you actually read those books? Her impression was that we had just bought books and stacked them on the bookshelf to make the bookshelf look booky.
Okay, this is all to do with this new concept of liquid living, just-in-time borrowing. Ownership is down, borrowing is up.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet marketing podcast, Kelvin, interviewed a lady whose name I've completely forgotten. She was talking about mesh businesses.
Mm.
And she was talking a lot about this liquid living concept. This sounds a bit like that, where everything's up on the cloud, or you just borrow from the cloud when you need it, just in time, as you need it. Is this what you're driving at, as opposed to hoarding locally?
So I'm trying not to find a particular point here, but I do notice that the media companies want to engender the thought that you never own content, you license content.
Right.
You never actually own that song. You license permission to use this song in the following formats.
Right.
You know, if you've bought a DVD, you haven't actually bought that movie. You've bought a DVD that gives you permission to watch that movie on that DVD.
Yeah.
So this is the feature of rights management, where publishers are spending a lot of time trying to coordinate and manage how people are managing content. Because if they had complete rights management, such that every one of those 400 books had to be paid for, then somehow or other, you know, Christian would have spent the money on 400 books. But there's a lot of books that are out of copyright, that are copyright free. So you can install those books for nothing. They're free. And so therefore, doing that is that... cheaper? Is it faster? Is it better? Is it more efficient? Or are you just loading up your bookshelf to look like you're loading your bookshelf? And not to say this is a bad thing, but are we at the rate where we have so much information that we become non-discreet in the way in which we access it because everything's available? Or do we take time to make sure the information that we're beginning to keep around us, we have also kept track on because we're aware of what it means to us.
I think
somebody comes to me and says, here's 500 books, and I go, oh, it's 500 books, I'll put them on my bookshelf, I might read them later, I'll never know what those books are. and what they mean to me or what their content means to me, and I take plenty of time to go through each one of those books.
We've been used to having stuff that we own around us, lots and lots of stuff that we may never get round to looking at and consuming in any way, but it doesn't matter. It's just the feeling that it's nice that we could. This is probably what Christian's saying when he has these N100 books on his device.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is there's a new future, there's a new way of living. It's sort of just-in-time borrowing or sort of licensing or...
Because the effect of digital is the removal of...
The physical object.
Yeah, yeah. It removes both the resource and the weight limit and the time limit.
Yes.
There's no reason not to have... they're looking at this new storage technology called NanoWise, which can potentially store the whole of the internet in the shape of a centimeter.
Is this where it uses a single electron to represent a bit?
Well, irrespective of what that technology delivers.
What's an interesting thing.
If you have the whole internet as a, on a chip on your mobile phone, would you be that person who does that, or would you be the person who just grabs the bits you need when you need them?
Right.
Even though you don't need to work that way. You could literally grab everything down because you might as well have it.
Mm.
I guess one of them is... There's different philosophies to it. Neither one is actually saying one is better than the other.
Mm.
But watching the instincts of how people take information and then grab information, it's almost like my habit now of bookmarking a website in Evernote because I want the whole website, not just the URL.
Right. So you're not afraid that it might have gone away when you next look?
Exactly. And so
are you afraid, Nick?
I am.
I put it to you, you were afraid.
Yeah, and well, it's not afraid. I've got evidence that, links inside Delicious disappear. You have the link, the website's gone because it's archived.
And what would you do then?
There's articles I've written for O'Reilly GMT, which are no longer hosted on O'Reilly GMT.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I would do after the event, but before the event now, I tend to bookmark it in Evernote, so I have a snapshot of it. And that's the same as saying, here are 400 books that I can just have on my Kindle. Mm. I'll just put them on my Kindle. I may not ever go back to them. So is data becoming a security blanket?
Right.
We're moving on. And speaking of security blankets, what happens if you lose it? Because Google, just this weekend, lost over 50,000 accounts of emails.
You're kidding me. Did it?
Just people had their emails reset.
Have they found them?
There's a whole update on the link, but there were people who got into their accounts and found all their emails gone. Disappeared.
Are you still using Google Mail after that?
Of course I'm still using Google Mail, because I'm not... My email is not my security blanket. My email is not my... The data retention, data ownership, is not a stress to me. To have, tens of years of data in that format. Wedding photos I have, but I have copies of them everywhere. Mm. So I'm not thinking, because again, it's a cost to have copies of them everywhere, so I'm not worried if Flickr goes down.
Do you back up your Google Mail by popping it locally?
I think you should ask.
We've discussed this before, tell us again.
I actually use a service called Backupify.
Backupify?
Which is another cloud service.
Is that backupify.com?
Backupify.com. And they back up my Twitter notes as well as my emails. And you can use Backupify to track and manage your Flickr, your Twitter, your Delicious, Google Docs, WordPress, Basecamp, emails.
Ooh, I have found it. It exists.
Now, if you want to just go for a manual process, there's a process I use called Getmail, which runs on a Linux command line.
Oh, I used to use Get or Fetch Mail. Is it Get or Fetch Mail?
No, Fetch Mail is something different.
Okay.
I use Get Mail because it's specifically targeted at Google, and I set that up for all my clients so that their mail services on Google Mail are backed up to their traditional mail server.
Okay.
Because the mail server is a backup mail server anyway, so it's there as a backup IMAP server as well.
Right. So most of the time they'll never look at it, it's just there as a backup.
It's just there as a backup and everything else. And again, there's the best part of the years of data. I know that my mail server at home has got 12 years worth of mail in it.
Yeah.
It's got an awful lot of email. It's got an awful lot of content. It's got content that goes back to 2004.
Mm.
When I was sending emails out to mail shots and mail lists. When the internet... And so the function of what my mail server provides me and my email is all... And there's no reason now why I couldn't just carry it around on my iPhone. Have all that email available.
Yeah.
Have all that content. See, now that's interesting. Ugh, why would you want that? So we'll have 400 books, 400 emails,
400 years worth of emails,
10 years worth of. But the data doesn't have any weight. It doesn't have any value. It's just a storage capacity.
I swear my iPhone is heavier when I've synced it, and there's loads of unwatched videos on there.
Well, I always tell people to delete files before they send it to me because it'll make it cheaper in transport. But the thing I find is that the there is this emotional connection to information.
Mm.
And on different types of information, like email versus a book versus a photo, there's a different emotional connection. I can't imagine what it must be like for an awful lot of people who's gone into their Google Mail accounts and everything's disappeared, for things where they've used it as a complete storage device.
Is that like me?
Because
that terrifies me.
If I get an email that's come in, yeah, it's important, the email gets sent to Evernote.
Automatically?
So, no, not automatically. Well, actually, on some it is. There's actually rules set up. So those are all set up to send to Evernote, which automatically indexes them. I back up my Evernote and my emails to my home server. I use Jungle Disk to back up my server back onto S3.
Yeah.
So my data is backed up all over the place. But that's because I can. Not because I have... Because if I lost all my emails, my value of it would be like, okay.
Yeah.
Plus my wedding photos that I scanned in, or the photos of Alyssa's birth or Harry's birth,
yeah,
I'd be upset.
Yeah.
But then again, I've got that data now backed up in multiple different places. And the chances of losing them requires, you know, a worldwide electromagnetic pulse that wipes out all data.
Just then, without warning...
Yes. The comedy alien invasion.
Have we got any sponsors to talk about it?
We don't at the moment. We have one.
We haven't got any sponsors,
Nick. We have one on the horizon.
Ooh, should we ask for some?
We have. And if we were speaking for sponsors, we would say to you, socialmediawhitenoise.com, go and click on the donate button. We have a PayPal button where you can donate to Social Media White Noise.
Buy us a coffee.
And you can buy us a coffee. Or leave a comment to say that you couldn't.
Yeah, leave a comment saying why you wouldn't buy us a coffee.
Speaking of which, I wish I could flag down to get in an extra coffee at the moment.
He's only behind you.
Oh, well.
Wave your arms around.
Arms around.
I had a thought just before we started walking up that steep hill.
It was before
we were walking up the steep hill.
That was a little bit too much, by the way.
It was so steep.
Don't do that again.
If it was icy, we'd slip them down.
What is Brighton like when it gets really icy like that? Because those roads must be hilarious.
It's lethal.
I mean, I can't imagine there are cars that don't go sideways.
The last time it was really icy, I was... Because I'm crap on ice. I'm really bad on ice. Yeah. I slip over so easily. And I was walking along. And
you're such a good dancer.
And the thing is, in Brighton, lots of the pavements slope. Not like hills, but they slope down to the road. And up by the Churchill Centre, there was this group of teenage girls. And I was just walking on, and I started to slide. And I thought, I'm sliding. And like I was in like a standing up position. But I was just literally, the whole of me was vertically sliding laterally down to the road. And I kind of went, oh, fuck. And as I said, fuck, my legs just completely went from underneath me. I just ended up on the back. And these teenage girls were just killing themselves laughing and saying stupid. It's just very embarrassing. Anyway, the thought I had was that we've got a census coming up. And I suddenly thought, do we still need the census with things like Facebook and Twitter? And you quite rightly pointed out that, actually, Andy, what's the proportion of people in this country on the internet?
I was going to look this up, but it is actually...
It's quite a low...
It's actually... The amount of people who are actually online in the UK is a very low number. Now, I have 40%, but I think that's the number worldwide.
14.
Well, 40.
Oh, 40%, right, OK.
And I believe it is actually less than 20% of people in the UK are actually online. Online.
Really? That's amazing.
It's
I thought
not
it was
the
more
same.
Than that.
It's not the same as people using mobile phones.
So hang on, the UK online people is less than the global.
Yes. Because it's population density versus population usage.
Right.
Because if you think you've got a household of four people,
yeah,
four people aren't actively being online at the same time. In fact, it's very likely that what you're dealing with is one account and four separate people and one computer. And it might not even be
actually
that.
My household, we're all pretty much all online at the same time.
We're the outliers. The people who are listening to the show are the outliers.
Right.
And we'd like to have this view that everybody's on the internet. But it's likely that we could take a poll in this coffee shop as to who is online and meet people who aren't online.
Yeah.
Who actually aren't. And we're not just talking about having the internet. You know, the classic thing is that, they could go to their library, well, that's if the library's still open.
Yeah.
But the internet access... I think my thing about the census being handled as it is it succeeds in one way of getting a lot of information together, but it fails in another way in that there are too many information managers or people who will say, I will answer this on behalf of my household. When the Digital Economy Bill was being discussed, one of the Labour MPs said, I sign off for the emails in my family. I sign off for the emails. All the emails are signed off by me here. Clearly had no clue of what he meant at all and had come up with some imaginary phrase for how he was handling
emails. I sign off the emails, right.
But he sort of suggested that all the emails in his family were, and therefore all the internet access was managed by him.
Okay.
So the census is just going to be... there's a potential that the census is still not reaching everybody.
Sure.
But it's reaching people who are willing to answer.
What's this about posturous?
And just we'll just come back to a brief thing. There is a comment has come up about filling in the religious section on the census.
Oh right, yeah.
And a lot of people in the last census put down Jedi because they thought that would be funny.
Have you heard of Dudism? The latest religion.
Dudism, is that because of the old Duderino?
I don't know. It might
Big
be.
Lebowski.
Dudism. Anyway, carry on. Yeah.
The suggestion is that people don't muck around with the religious, because the problem is that the census is used to collate figures for the government to work out what to spend money on.
Right.
So if everybody puts down Jedi, the government thinks we're a very religious country, and therefore we need to spend more money on
Jedi.
Religions.
On right savers.
So the more rational point of view.
Yeah.
I'd love to see this is March, it starts tomorrow. We'll then be into National Science Week in March.
Oh yeah, the science festival's on as well here in Brighton.
And I would love to think that we could take an approach to science in the same way we take an approach to the Olympics. I'd love to think we could actually approach science in the same way that we approach the X Factor. That we can actually have some real passion for it, and money, and investment, and pay attention to the concept.
And Simon
Cowell is a little bit more. Is actually a little bit more important to the well-being of everybody compared to one person hitting a note or managing to dance a little better.
With 5 minutes to go.
I've written about this on my Posterous blog. This paper,
which is a wonderful segue, in the last 5 minutes of the show.
And I actually wrote about this.
Is it Posterous' birthday or something?
Because. We talked about this in an earlier. We talked about this in a much, much earlier show.
Is it Postgres or Postgres?
We talked about Tumblr.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
And we talked about, I just ignore it. And we also kind of maybe talked about flavours.me and so forth.
We did.
And I'm still using my WordPress site for full blogging.
Yeah.
But I noticed more and more people are using Postgres to generate what I would call sort of fast-moving, high-speed, sudden-up blogs.
Yeah.
Like, here we go, create a blog, create some content, boom, 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 put the content in there. And it is being used in a far more, sort of in a much more rounded fashion, in that people are now sort of going, Senny Dreadful's blog is on Postgres, The Box Room is on Postgres.
Yeah.
Christian's documentaries, you know, he's not using our
So is this a new style of blogging, short-form blogging?
I think it is short-form blogging. I think
Twitter.
It's the Twitter for blogging.
The middle ground between Twitter and blogging.
I think it's the middle ground where people are putting that content together, adding some thoughts, allowing some comments. And we're seeing, you know, I'm seeing the library in my lap comment, and it's, you know, it's a photograph. I've over 4,000 books in my lap, and I'm reading more than ever. No beeps, no notifications, just words. It's short form blogging. Mm. But then we look at what Sally Dreadful's done, and you can see it's a full article.
On Postgres? I keep forgetting, on Postgres, you can have your own domain, can't you?
You now register your own domain.
So it's not obvious we're using Postgres.
So, apart from the little Postgres logos and Postgres
okay.
around it.
Okay, I'll concede that.
But yes, it's not necessarily obvious. I don't think it's a bad thing. But obviously, your next question is, how do you back it up?
Go on then.
Because I can back up everything on Backify. I can back up my WordPress, but as yet, Backify don't have a Postgres backup.
Oh,
and then
I see.
If you're emailing your content to Postgres, it's emailed with Gmail, and you back up your Gmail.
You said earlier that you send emails to Evernote.
I have a filter set up automatically.
Evernote
has an email address for me.
Okay.
If I send content to it, it goes into my account.
Okay.
It's a unique address. My filter is set up in Gmail.
Yeah.
That if a certain email arrives that matches a certain filter, that it applies a label, marks it as read, archives it, and forwards it.
As opposed to Evernote.
To Evernote. And Evernote, get an email.
Yeah.
So Evernote get that email.
Because that will sync with your iPhone as well. Yeah.
So that's where my receipts go.
Okay.
And that's how I'm making use of that. So this is very much the data conversation.
Nick, do you ever get confused on all your backups and things? Yeah, have to draw yourself a diagram to remind you what's going on.
Yes, I actually how do you have a diagram.
How you can create it if it broke.
I will produce the diagram.
Is that backed up anywhere?
It's backed up as well. it's actually on lovely charts.
What if your backup cache died and it had the diagram in of how you do all your backups?
That could be a problem. It's a bit like when people used to use ArcServe to do backups.
Oh, right.
And then their server would die.
Right.
They would realise they hadn't kept the CDs for ArcServe to recover ArcServe tapes.
Or they hadn't written properly, yeah.
So as a result, their tapes were particularly useless to them. Done that.
It's 29 minutes and 30 seconds into the show, into the talking bit of the show, excluding intros and exits. Any final thoughts to say, Nick, or requests or questions? Or
Just check your backups. That's the thing to do.
Are they backing up properly? Yes. Do a test restore. Do you think test restores are good?
I have built into my clients' contracts the requirement that every 2 years we do a full test restore.
Really?
And yeah. We buy in machinery and we do a full test restore and a full recovery.
Yeah.
And they go, they say, I don't want to pay that money. And then we do one test restore. I say to them, just do one test restore. And they see a test restore going on. And they feel that huge, oh, this does work. Our backups are okay.
Yes.
Everything's good.
This black hole I've been throwing all my data into is actually worth doing.
I like the fact that we test our backups. And then they go, can we do this every year? And I go, it's fine.
Yeah.
I get paid for it. It's a money for all growth.
And then you can have a little party afterwards.
But you know your data's there, and you know where it is.
Yeah.
It's 11 o'clock at night. Do you know where your data is?
With that, I think we'll just have to leave it there.
Yes, I have been, because we never introduced ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been Nick Butler, a.k.a. the Loudmouth Man at loudmouthman.com.
And I have been Dr. Pod, Andy White, Doctoral Pod spelled out, fully Doctoral Pod. Yes, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, ta-ra. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com, where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod and Loudmouth Man. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, social media and technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.